Hey everyone, I just want to remind you that we have two webinars coming up very soon at Renegade University. The first is selling out fast, so I urge you, if you're interested, to get your tickets now. That is Postmodernism, Critical Theory, and American Politics, co-taught by me and James Lindsay. Go to renegadeuniversity.com to get your tickets for that. Now we're going to have to cap it soon because we want to have an intimate learning experience for everyone who takes that webinar. The second one immediately follows that, begins on January 26th. This is Talkin' Shit, the History of Hip Hop with the great Kamasi Hill. So go to renegadeuniversity.com, get your tickets for those webinars now. Hope to see you soon. Thank you.
This is the Unregistered Podcast, and I'm Thaddeus Russell. This is a show about ideas, people, and behaviors that are considered inappropriate, out of bounds, or beyond the pale. The things you're not supposed to talk about if you're a school teacher, a college professor, a businessman, a politician, a parent, a neighbor, or even a podcast host. These are the things you're not supposed to say or even think if you're a good liberal, a good conservative, or a good citizen. Each week, I'll interview a person who has something bad to say. They might be a journalist or a professor. They might be a porn star or a drug dealer. They might just be an ordinary person with an ordinary job who doesn't care about the rules of polite society. I'm not interested in breaking the rules just to be a troublemaker. I'm interested in people who break the rules of conventional thought and to expand the scope of what is possible to say in our society. I'm interested in people who make me think.
The government lockdowns, instituted in response to the COVID virus, have created an economic catastrophe for most Americans while benefiting the largest and wealthiest corporations. They have also caused an unprecedented mental health crisis in this country. I believe that my guest this week will convince you that none of this was necessary. This is my interview with Ivor Cummins. So I am joined from Dublin, Ireland, I believe. Are you in Dublin, Ivor?
Yeah, Todd. Dublin, Ireland.
All right. By the great Ivor Cummins, who is known to many, many, many people around the world for more than one thing, but this year he's known especially for his critique of the lockdowns and the mandatory mask cultures of the world, and has made quite a name of him for himself in this way. And I heard him on several podcasts talking about this, and I was blown away. And I wanted to have you on the show for this very reason, because I have not had anyone on the show who's really a specialist in this and who's really an expert and who's waging the kind of critique that you have been doing. So Ivor, I want to begin with telling you about my problem. This show is about my problem, okay? And it's a problem I want you to help me with. All right, so two nights ago, my girlfriend and I were walking at 10 o'clock at night. This is in Marin County. I'm in the San Francisco Bay Area, all right, which has been in lockdown since March. And we were walking on an outdoor walking path, kind of a hiking trail, through the woods, actually. And we didn't see a single soul for the first 10 minutes of this walk. And then finally, one person started to approach us on the path, walked toward us, then walked past us. And as she walked past us, she yelled at the top of her lungs, "Where are your masks?" Because we don't wear masks outside, never have. I refuse to. Now, I don't know if you know about the compliance rates in San Francisco and the Bay Area here, but they've been around 97%. And I can attest that is an accurate number. If you walk around the streets of San Francisco or Berkeley, which is where the University of California is, and Oakland, where I live, it's virtually everyone. And most importantly, it's people driving all alone in their cars who are wearing masks. It's people who are walking all by themselves outside with masks on. And this is the third time we've been yelled at for not wearing our masks outside on the same walking path, by the way. Now, I have gotten to the point where I am actually afraid to walk outside because I refuse to wear a mask, but I also hate being shamed the way that I am. I'm feeling side eyes at best from all kinds of people as I'm walking down the street. So first of all, I want you to explain what I should say to these people and what I should think about this and what they should think about this. And then we'll get into the rest of Corona and the lockdowns. But just about masking, this is what is torturing me the most right now. It is really making life unlivable for me.
Right, Todd, and I sympathize. It doesn't actually bother me if anyone challenges me because I almost like it. But everyone, most people will be bothered, I agree. Yeah. So masking, I would say to people that a fact that there have been four decades of science around mask and viral transmission. And the answer overwhelmingly has almost no benefit or none at all. And that's four decades of science. Don't sniff at four decades of science. We've had 4 weeks of hastily thrown together very weak studies in June 2020, which claim masks may give a benefit. So it's 4 decades versus 4 weeks of weak studies, around 3 or 4 studies. There's no competition. You cannot, you're a science denier if you flush down the toilet 4 decades versus a few studies, and the studies are biased. It's quite clear. So that's kind of the fundamental thing. I was not anti-mask. I was pro-mask when I first got involved in Corona in March and April. I have the video podcast to prove it. I was highly pro-mask versus using lockdown, which I knew was nonsense. So I was promoting mask, and Taiwan videos and documentaries kind of showing masks might help. I felt it was a less invasive, less crazy thing than destroying your society with lockdowns. The problem is then I spent some time on it. I realized that the answer from the people above was lockdowns and masks. And then in the middle of the summer, and I had said well in advance, there will be no corona deaths or ICU problems in the summer in Europe. By May or June, the hospitals will be empty and these guys will have to stop the lockdowns. You know what they did instead, Thad? In the middle of the summer, with nothing going on and 4 months away from the winter, where of course there'll be a resurgence of SARS-CoV-2 in the winter. It's not going to be gone till next winter. They brought in mandatory masks all over Europe with fines and prison sentences. And on that day, I realized something was catastrophically wrong with the world. Because whatever about a belief that lockdowns would flatten the curve, why didn't they take them out when the curve was over in Europe? They could bring them in next winter, maybe, if they needed to.
Right.
They kept them. And why did they bring in masks in the middle of the summer when nothing was happening and bring them in with laws? I mean, that's the most anti-scientific thing that I've probably witnessed in my lifetime. And I'm 30 years in science, you know, as a problem-solving leader. That's the worst thing I've seen scientifically in my career. Not because the masks do nothing, or you can argue about the science, but to bring them in with laws in midsummer when nothing is happening, that means there's no exit strategy. You have brought in masks in perpetuity for your citizens with no science and with no reason to bring them in. And they did it.
So you're saying 4 decades of science have shown that masks do not help in stopping the spread of what, airborne viruses? Is that it?
Generally influenza, but influenza is of broadly the same family as coronaviruses. And the transmission characteristics, sizes, et cetera, are broadly the same. So it's perfect analogy. And the science didn't say they're absolutely no use. The science clearly said that they're of so little use that you cannot find any evidence to support them, which is good enough for me.
Yeah. So the chances of me transmitting the virus to someone as I'm walking by them on the sidewalk without a mask on are, what are the chances?
People asked me this back in April, and I said, look, there's this Chinese study, and there was no fraud in the study because it was in China's interest to exaggerate this. And we know that they had Twitter accounts to fool the West into panicking. So China honestly had a study, and out of 420 or maybe 320 index cases, people who actually had it, there was only one suspected case of transmission in the outdoor setting. And generally, all of the science has said that. that outdoor transmission is essentially non-existent by the science. And that's with no masks.
Yeah.
So if it happens, it happens so little that trying to address it is meaningless. It's just meaningless. And yet Spain brought in mandatory masks outdoors everywhere but the beach in August, in the hot Spanish summer when nothing was happening. You know, you can say that the authorities are ignorant or do not understand the science, which is hard to believe, given that they're the authorities. But now we catch them almost certainly knowingly doing anti-scientific things because of how I described it. There is no defense for what I described. None.
Wow. So I do want to spend a lot of time on the motivations for the authorities in all these countries. Because you've said some very interesting things, and I want to sort of end with that, actually, but spend quite a bit of time on that. Let's just lay out the science first and sort of your critique of what I would call lockdown culture, right? Because it's not just the laws. There's a culture that upholds these laws, right? Makes them, gives them teeth. So, okay, I've heard that that woman who yelled at us on the sidewalk, on the walking path, is ridiculous. And so when I yelled at her, what I yelled at her was, "You're crazy, read the science."
Good reply, because you are correct.
Okay, good. Good. Now, let's talk about the lockdowns generally. We'll get to the reasons for behind them later, but Give us your take. You've been publishing many, many videos on your YouTube channel. The Fat Emperor, by the way, is the name of your YouTube channel, and your blog, also named that. It's overwhelming, the amount of data you've presented, I think, and it is highly persuasive. Is there a way for you to distill it for my audience?
Well, thanks, Dad, but I'll try and distill it. So probably the most important thing to say now, because we have the data. So when the modeling was done, we know now for a scientific fact that the modeling from Imperial and the IHME in the States, which is like the Imperial of the US, they all copied each other based on ancient computer programs, very bad assumptions. I don't know if people realize, but the initial infection fatality rate assumption was rooted to six people who got infected out of six flights out of Wuhan in China in February, around 680 people.
Wow.
So six infected people on six flights formed the core basis for that modeling. And it was not peer reviewed, but the whole world went with it, starting with the UK Imperial College. So that's one thing. So we know now that it was out by a factor of 10 to 12. So that's just a fact.
Right.
So the modeling was 10 times or more wrong. And that's why we locked down. But anyway, the other thing is the modeling can only guess, but the data, when you actually go through something, can tell. Mm-hmm. So the data now, we have it all from late April right up to papers published in the last 2 weeks. We have 25 publications of analyses, including one in Lancet and one in the British Medical Journal, a lot of preprints, not peer-reviewed, but they're good science. You read them. Mm-hmm. 25 publications that show clearly lockdown has almost no or no effect on mortality in any country or even across the states of the US. Lockdown doesn't even correlate with mortality per million for the countries. So the answer's in.
Okay.
You can argue that there's a reason that lockdown or stringency of lockdown has no relationship to the actual mortality you end up getting.
Right.
You can argue, please be my guest, but you need to give a scientific argument as to why 25 studies show no correlation. If you've got a correlation, it could be spurious or could be false. Mm-hmm. But if you have no correlation, you have no ground to stand on. And that's where lockdowners have no ground to stand on. So they're on my website, The Fat Emperor, a blog around 2 weeks ago, and I have them all downloadable by PDF and lots of other material. They're all there. So that's probably the most important thing. The science is in and we have the answer.
Mm-hmm.
But also I just add another couple of things in lockdown. So if you look at a graph for Europe and the US, the mortality per million, you'll see huge humps in Europe in the last winter and this winter. Mm-hmm. And in America, it's different because America is like multiple regions or seasons. So Northeast America behaves like Europe. You know, New York went up mm-hmm. and there's not much now. And South America behaves like Brazil or Mexico. It's a longer, slower hump. Mm-hmm. But either way, we've got these big mortality curves. But if you look at Japan, Thailand, and Vietnam and all these countries, there's literally almost no mortality.
Right.
So anyone who suggests that these huge impacts, right, 50 times bigger than all the Asian countries is because of lockdowns or masks has a mental issue. Because you could argue lockdowns, even though they don't correlate in 25 studies to mortality, you could argue they do something, but it's not 50 times smaller something. And masks, even people who promote masks, accept that they're 10% improvement or something. It's not 98% lower.
Right.
So we know that the Asian countries have 50 times less mortality, and it's not lockdowns or masks. It's nonsense to say, you know, it's clearly nonsense. So what is it? And what it would appear to be is the health of the aged. The mm-hmm. aged are the people who suffer here.
Right.
The health of the aged in Asia is enormously better
right.
than in Western Europe. That's one thing. Their vitamin D status is way higher, which reflects metabolic health of the aged, mm-hmm. way higher. And they have cross immunity. So they were hit with the SARS-1 and they have a lot of T cell memory to SARS type coronaviruses. So that wouldn't be another very likely big factor. Mm-hmm. So although they still get infected, and one Tokyo study, this is very important. One Tokyo study tracked a few hundred people across 13 regions of Tokyo. Now, Tokyo did not lock down, and they wear masks on and off, not quite as much as you'd think. But they tracked the people, and they tested them for antibodies to SARS-CoV-2, to this virus, every 2 weeks. And what they saw during the hump in their kind of epidemic, but no one really died, what they saw was that group, as a test group, went up to nearly 50% developed SARS-CoV-2 antibodies. So in other words, tracking properly, nearly 50% of the people in Tokyo actually were infected and got antibodies, but they didn't get the severity of outcome.
Right.
No hospital problem, very few deaths.
Right.
So it's not true that they even stopped the infection. They just were not really affected by it.
Right.
And the reason is what I mentioned, those few things and more.
So, okay. So Asia is a great place to look, right? Because you have very different responses to the virus, right? So in China, as I understand it, there was this very draconian, strict lockdown for a brief time and they sort of got rid of it, right? Is this correct? In a couple of months?
That's a myth.
Okay.
They certainly showed on the television and they sent a lot of video to the West. In fact, it was a push system rather than a pull from the West. Huh. They pushed lots of videos of people dropping dead in the street and of welded doors.
Yeah.
That I would say was propaganda, essentially. So in Wuhan, million people or more left that city when the lockdowns were looming because there seemed to be something going on. And they all went out of the city, but you didn't have any problem anywhere else. So there's a lot of question marks. So China basically had this blip. There was a lot of media coverage. But after that, China, for the next 12 months, nothing happened. They were back to water parties with tens of thousands of people, no masks.
Right.
The videos are out there since May and June.
Right.
So how people can believe that a bit of lockdown action fixed the virus when it was well out in that population? That's impossible, right? Of course it would have spread like everywhere else. But nothing happened in China since. So I'd say what they did is they hyper-focused on the impact of this nasty virus. And for listeners, it is a nasty virus if you're metabolically ill or aged, for sure. And you don't have much prior immunity from other coronaviruses. It can be very nasty. But I think China massively exaggerated their experience early on. And once the West kind of went crazy, they kind of went back to business and probably just stopped counting people dying from it. You know what I mean? Most of them are very aged anyway. Hmm. So I'd say that China just moved on.
Hmm. And are you suggesting that the lockdown there was not as strict as we believe?
Well, Professor Michael Levitt, in February of this year, Nobel Prize winner, mathematical modeler of biochemical complex equations. He won the Nobel Prize in 2013 for this in Stanford. So let's not question him now. He was in China in that period.
Oh.
And he just, as a matter of interest, was fascinated by all of this. So he looked at the curves and he realized that the virus as it rose from the Chinese data was not exponential. From the first day or two, it was slowing down its spread mathematically, and it curled over independent of their lockdown. And then he verified that with the Italian data. And I also have a risk manager from Wall Street hedge fund, Tucker Goodrich, did a podcast late March with him, and he agreed with Professor Levitt. Now, Tucker was in charge of risk management and projection for a hedge fund in the SARS-1. So that's the kind of guy he is. Again, no point questioning guys like that.
Right.
And he showed me in Excel, in a long podcast, how in Italy, the thing was slowing down from the first day. Now, it was going up, but it was mathematically slowing down from the first day, and it curled over. And Italy also put in their lockdown after the curve had turned.
Okay.
And the curve kept going down and ignored the lockdown. It's the same in the UK. It's the same nearly everywhere.
Yeah.
So mathematically, we know the lockdown has very little impact. The viral curve is a function of your societal metabolic health, the amount of prior immunity you have from exposure to prior coronaviruses, and a few other factors. It's not a function of lockdown. And that's why there's no correlation between lockdown and mortality.
And this is why the United States is the champion of COVID deaths, correct? Because our we are very unhealthy, and our elderly are especially unhealthy. We have, as you know, everyone knows, tremendous obesity rates here, right? And diabetes rates and the rest of it, right? We are a very unhealthy nation. I mean, us, apart from the people who live on in big cities on the coasts, if you get on off the plane in most of America, like middle America cities, you will see most of the people in the airport severely overweight. And we know the rates here. It's ridiculous. It's, so is that an explanation for why not so much Trump's laxity, right, on this, but it's the poor health of Americans generally accounts for our very bad experience with this. Is that right?
Metabolic health of your population, particularly more aged ones, is the big factor.
Okay.
And then the cross immunity type one is another. And there's some more as well. And to be honest, if everyone was naked and crawling over each other, like 300 million people all the time, you'd get more spread, you know.
Right.
But lockdown of a functioning society who are still going to stores and still living at home with other people, you can't get any more benefit of stopping spread by locking them down more. So, you know, at some level, it's true. If you're in a sparsely populated country, you know, when everyone's living in a log cabin 10 miles apart and they don't mix, of course you're going to slow spread, but that's extreme. But the reality is, once you've got any kind of functional society, even locked down, they're going in and out of stores. I'll give an example, Thad. So in Ireland and the US, we have the data. During our major epidemic, right in the hotspot, when there were no masks, all of the great unwashed who were locked down were allowed to go in and out of the stores.
Oh,
so think about this.
I love this.
The store workers were working in the stores, and they had token distancing and some other stuff, but no masks. It's indoors,
right?
Oh my God. They're hugely exposed because all of the people are flowing in and out all day long, 10 hours a day. So if lockdown worked, the non-lockdown store workers, which they were non-lockdown, they were super exposed, right? They have to have a higher signal for infection and mortality, but they didn't. They didn't.
Yeah.
So for the lay person, that's the example I give. lockdown cannot be effective if the people, the control group, the store workers who are not locked down, and the police who are even breaking up demonstrations with no masks, the police, the store workers, no signal for extra infection or death.
Right.
Bam. There's your answer.
Right. Yeah. I heard you say this on another podcast and I was blown away by that. I thought, oh, of course. Right. All those grocery store workers here, right, who are getting, I mean, contact with strangers, you know, every sec, new contact with strangers every second. And there was no, as I understand it, there's no outbreak among grocery store workers in any country, certainly not here, right? Trader Joe's and Whole Foods never once had to do anything. You know, there's never a crisis in those companies. That's right.
It's the same for pilots and airline staff before the masks came in.
Yeah.
No signal. Right. Yeah. You can list them all off. The only reason shop workers in some studies show a little higher rate is socioeconomic. That sadly, because they tend to be a lower socioeconomic class with more metabolic health issues, maybe poorer diets, you'll see a signal somewhat, but that's completely explainable by socioeconomic. And you'll also see the same signal in security workers. They do a lot of night work. They maybe don't get enough sun and healthy food, right? So security workers have a very strong signal in the UK, worse than shop workers. But that's because of socioeconomic and other factors. So everywhere you look, the data, I have a page of evidence that lockdown is better than the Swedish light touch approach with no lockdown and no masks. And the evidence against that being the case, I fill pages. The evidence for lockdown being better, I have nothing. And it's not because I'm biased. I invited all of the people who argue with me over 6 months, please give me evidence supporting that lockdown's better than Sweden approach. And I can't get any.
Because you just lived through 2020, and 2020 isn't really over yet, you probably need help with your mental health, just like I do. I am so glad that I've been able to use CBD every day since last March when the lockdowns began in California. And I'm especially glad that I've been able to get CBD products from a company whose cause I totally believe in and who have been so generous to me and Unregistered listeners by giving us all unbelievable discounts on all of their products. That company, as many of you know, is Paloma Verde CBD, based in San Antonio, Texas, owned and operated by the married couple Vanessa and Carlos Abelar. They are giving us 25% off every one of their products in their catalog. If you also join their mailing list, you get an additional 10% off. And you might be interested in what's called the Unregistered Combo Pack, which is simply my three favorite Paloma Verde products. They are their gummies, which come in many delicious fruit flavors. I've said this many times. This is my favorite candy, and it also happens to be very good for me. 10 milligrams of CBD in each gummy helps me a lot with my anxiety and my insomnia. Their soft gels. This is the serious medicine. I take 2 to 6 of these, depending on what the pandemic and Twitter is doing to me. These have 25 milligrams per soft gel. Love them. But my favorite thing is their high-potency tincture. I put a few drops under my tongue, and I feel my anxiety melt away almost instantly, as do many Unregistered listeners who have told me so. The Unregistered Combo Pack you get for 33% off, and it is the best-selling product at Paloma Verde. How do you get these amazing discounts? How do you support a company whose cause, believe me, you will support? Go to palomaverdestore.com and use the discount code Renegade. Again, that's 25% off every product in their store, 33% off the Unregistered Combo Pack, which they call the Thad Pack. Join their mailing list for another 10% off, so your first order is probably going to be 35% off total. palomaverdestore.com, discount code Renegade. Do it. Make your body feel better. Make your life better. And I thank you. How do we know you're
Nada.
Not, how do we know you're not biased? So I have a politics that is pretty much rooted in some kind of individualism, right? And I've noticed that people, and we'll, this is kind of like merging into our conversation about why people are pushing these things, but yeah, pretty much rooted in individualism and personal freedom. And I have noticed, and I'm sure you've noticed, that the people who are closest to what in America we call progressivism, kind of, or liberalism in American terms, right? The more they are adherents to lockdown culture, right? And the people who are farther from it are the ones who tend to rebel. I mean, it's really a one-to-one correspondence. I mean, the closer you are to the politics of the Democratic Party, essentially, in this country, the much more likely you are to wear masks all the time and to shame your neighbors and to insist that we continue the lockdowns indefinitely. And those who tend to be Republicans or libertarians, just the opposite, right? Much more skeptical of it and much more rebellious toward this new regime. What about you? How do we know that you're... So I do have a bias going into this. I have a bias in favor of civil rights and individual liberty, which I admit that makes me extra skeptical of anything that's global collectivist, you know, authoritarianism, which is what, even if you were for these things, you must admit that these are authoritarian policies. In this state, in California, Gavin Newsom, our lovely governor, has just announced with executive edicts, without even telling us which scientists he has consulted, that we're going to lock down now, we're going to lock down again, we're going to lock down further, we're going to extend the lockdown, and now we don't even know when we're going to end. We're back in a very draconian lockdown where we were in March, Ivor. California, you may know, like, we are right back to where we were in March, and he's just saying, oh, we're going to probably have to extend this, and the ICUs are full, and da-da-da-da. And the thing that makes me want to kill myself, frankly, sometimes, is that I see none of my fellow Californians, or very few of my Californians, even questioning this. And again, it's these people on the streets instead who yell at me for not wearing a mask when there is no science to support that. So how do we know that you're not biased? And what do you make of this clear correspondence between one politics and one's attitude toward the lockdowns?
Yeah, Holt, there's a lot to unpack there. But the question, I'll focus on the question. So I always say to people, direct to camera, and people often know, even I'm a manager of people for decades, so I can really read people, but even the average person knows when someone's looking at them, staring at them, that they're telling the truth. Mm. So what I say is I have two primary motivations, and I'm looking at you, the listener, straight in the eye. One of my primary motivations is I have five children, and I've always been future focused for the future of the next generation. I don't care about me. I'm going to die. We all die. So I am biased towards the next generation. It's my nature. That's why I have a large family and I spend a lot of time securing their future. That's my big thing in life. The second thing is, and this is not as common, I've always been fixated with truth and science, with technical facts and truth in physics. I'm not sure why. When I was young, I used to get really angry when people would misrepresent the way things worked because it suited them. Mm-hmm. And I got in trouble my first few years as an engineer because I got in big arguments with more senior people who were politically twisting the reason for a problem because it suited them. Mm. And somehow the twisting of technical truth offends me at some psychological level, and I never lost it. Mm. So they're my two primary drivers, truth and science, and a focus on the overall population health and the future of the next generation. That's what drives me. Okay. So needless to say, when this thing got crazy in April and May and got crazier in June and July with mandatory masks and is getting crazier by the day, it's driving my core beliefs and philosophies, and it's abusing them. It's trampling on them. So that's my answer. I have always been known for the fundamental crucial thing in finding the technical truth in a complex problem. You must challenge your own hypotheses. So most people nowadays, Professor Karl Popper, who was a philosopher on basically how you get technical facts and truths versus incorrect things in science, he said the same thing. And I didn't know that years ago, but I still believed it. You challenge your own beliefs and hypotheses. You don't try and find evidence to support what you believe. Mm-hmm. You strive to find evidence that breaks your hypothesis. Right. And in doing that, you rapidly kill bad hypotheses and you get rapidly to the correct one.
Huh.
That's my whole life. That's what I'm doing now too. But guys, I can't find any evidence to break my hypotheses.
Mm-hmm. So in this country, you may know this, maybe not. If, and this is not an exaggeration, my listeners can back me up on this, if you express any skepticism about the lockdowns and masking, you are labeled a Trump supporter. It's that simple. You are dismissed as a Trump supporter, and which for me is infuriating because, hello, everyone, I am not a Trump supporter. I think he's a war criminal. I think he's disgusting in terms of policy. He's been especially disgusting on many, right, in many ways. I wouldn't vote for him if he held a gun to my head. So we are not allowed. We are not allowed because, of course, in this country, being a Trump supporter is anathema in the mainstream media. You are the devil. You are not allowed to ask questions about these things, to express skepticism, without being just thrown into the dustbin as some kind of racist. And we're also called racist, by the way, because, you know, African Americans, they say, are disproportionately affected. Now, that's actually not true. It's poor people and working class people who are disproportionately affected. It just happens that in this country, African Americans are disproportionately poor. But to be Black does not make you more susceptible to the virus. Am I right?
Yeah, I mean, Black doctor, for instance, to your point, is not particularly going to be put out compared to a white doctor or whatever. It's socioeconomic, like we said about the workers earlier. Yeah, right. Now, there is a fact that there is a metabolic and scientific reason why a Black person will be hit harder by the virus. Hmm. And that's because of lower vitamin D. But also, a lot of it is the socioeconomic impacts of being of a certain race means you're unhealthier on average. So we know, right, diabetes and all kinds of metabolic disease. And your metabolic health is largely tied to your immune system health. Mm-hmm. The two are almost two sides of the same coin. Immune system is part of your metabolism.
Right.
So if you are diabetic with high insulin and high blood glucose, you're going to be ravaged with a SARS-CoV-2 infection compared to someone who's insulin sensitive with low blood glucose. And we know that. Okay. And Black people in general have low vitamin D, poor immune function. They're not getting enough sun, and their skin should be in a very powerful UV environment. But in North America, it's not. So there's a whole mixture of things that make things worse for them.
Right.
None of them are their fault. But there is an element of they are more affected.
Okay. So back to my question, though. What are your politics? Can you describe them?
That's easy. I actually have none. So I'm so apolitical. Now, really? if you include politics to include philosophies, maybe. But I'm just in terms of politics, left, right. And I'm probably I'm left-leaning on certain things.
Okay.
So, for instance, I got in trouble. You love this, Tad. I got in trouble a few years ago because I've been working in metabolic health and fat, insulin, you know, cholesterol for years. But I got in trouble with my American supporters, some of them, around 3 or 4 years ago when the Trump tension was there. I was being accused of being a Trumpist. And the reason was I came out and honestly said that I did support the medical care system in Europe. Mm-hmm. And I didn't think it was socialist. I just thought it was a caring society, and it's not ideal, but they try and have a safety net.
Yeah.
And by defending that, years ago, they called me a socialist.
Okay.
Many of my American followers were kind of Trumpian or whatever, and they called me a socialist. Hmm. The clock goes forward a couple of years. So I'm being called a socialist by Americans who are more the Trump side,
right,
for defending universal healthcare.
Right.
A few years pass. Now I'm being attacked for being a Trump person,
right?
Because I didn't really even understand that I knew this, but I believe in personal freedoms, and like hugely, but they were never challenged before, that belief, because I could take them for granted.
Uh-huh.
So now I'm going crazy and appear to be like a Trump person, and Democrats will attack me, but I'm the same person with the same beliefs.
Yeah.
So that just shows you the politics is absurd, because
it is.
You've got autocratic, draconian, almost Nazi behaviors, mm-hmm, on the left who, mm-hmm, are meant to be liberal.
Mm-hmm.
And then nothing makes sense anymore. The politics is meaningless. I think that the people on the right are coming out against this because they tend to be people who are more independent thinkers. They like freedom.
That's
and
it.
The world of... Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why.
Yeah. So how about in Ireland? How are you received and perceived in Ireland? How are you perceived on the street when you're not wearing a mask? Just tell us what your life is like. I want to know what your life is like.
Well, I've been working so hard on this, and I don't mean to be now, oh, aren't I great? But I have. I've been fixated for the future of the children. So this is serious for me. This mm-hmm. is not about me. Mm-hmm. So I've been working 7 days a week, and it's hitting 9 months now, yeah. and getting a lot of abuse. And that's a long time to be working 7 days a week with no breaks and getting abused. but I'm okay with it because it's so important. But I go out and I don't wear a mask because I, on a point of principle, will not support anti-science, even if someone wrongly and unjustly puts in laws to support anti-science. I can't, on a point of principle, support them. But I wear them on aeroplanes and in airports because I understand and accept there are certain environments. And in Spain, I wore them somewhat on the street because I'm in someone else's country. And even though it's ridiculous, I respect someone else's jurisdiction. But Ireland's my home country, so I don't wear one. I have been challenged a few times, and I've dealt with it summarily. And the people who challenge me won't do so again.
tell us.
Now, verbally.
Tell us how you've responded. I want to know. Were you as harsh as I was?
Well, I'll give an example, and I'm going to be abused for this. I'm walking in this huge indoor mall. And I walk into it anyway, and this is months ago in the middle of the summer. So no ICUs, no deaths, mm-hmm. and whatever about in the middle of the winter when stuff's going on. But this is the middle of the summer. And I walk in, and there's a huge corridor with stores on each side, maybe 30 feet across. And I see a security guard. You know the way security guards now are all dressed like riot police with yellow and phones and stuff hanging off them? Mm-hmm. So he looks, and he's got this blue mask on. So I made a point of walking directly towards him, and I held his eye contact from 30 feet away. And as I approached him, he realized, you know, the way it sense someone's looking at me, and he looked and saw me over his mask. You know, they all look bovine with the masks on, you know, middle of the summer, middle of a big open area, two eyeballs. So he's looking at me. And as I walk 6 feet of him, he says, "Oh, your mask," he mumbled. And I just looked at him and said, "Exempt." And just kept walking.
Exempt.
And I just walked exempt. I didn't even say I'm exempt. I just said exempt. And I walked past him. Huh. And he just, and that was the end. And then I went ahead and did my shopping. I got some slacks and I had to get a shirt for some interview thing. And I went home with my shopping. But, you know, at some point, someone may challenge me and say, you cannot enter the store. And technically you can be fined in Ireland 50 by a policeman for being in a store. Mm-hmm. And at some point I might say, okay, I'm never coming to this store again. I'm not going to start a fight over it, but I make it clear that this is unscientific, unconstitutional, unjust, and it's complete nonsense. And I always use the word nonsense because non-science. It is not scientific to mandatory masks. Mm-hmm. You can argue they have some effect, but to make it mandatory by law based on the science that exists mm-hmm. is fundamentally unjust.
Right.
That is a principle. It's just a principle. No one cares about principles anymore. That gets me too.
That is for sure. Okay, interesting. So you are a supporter of universal healthcare, publicly funded, but because you're skeptical of draconian lockdowns, you are the Irish version of a Trump supporter. Okay, which makes perfect sense. So let's get back to the critique of the efficacy of lockdowns. And I mean, you know, you've already covered a lot of this, but I want the listeners to be really clear about this. So Japan had minimal or no lockdown, right? And they had virtually no deaths from this, right? I mean, is this correct? Like a very, very tiny number.
Yeah, well, they're between 50 and 100 times lower than many countries. They're right. Basically don't even register. They have, I think, 3,000, and I think they got 100 million people. So okay. It'd be like America having 9,000 in the whole period.
Okay.
I mean,
tiny.
It could be smaller than that. It could be smaller.
Yeah. Right. Tiny. Okay. And tiny. And you're guessing, I mean, it's an educated guess, and it seems very persuasive to me. We know, I mean, the Japanese are well known for being an extremely healthy population, the longest living people on earth, and have been for many, many decades, right? And even though they're an elderly population, I believe, right, their elderly are just very healthy, certainly compared to our old people here and in the UK and in Ireland, right? So that's okay. We got that. And then there's China. And you're saying that there are a lot of mythology around what happened in China. So there's not much we can say about it, actually, with much certainty. Then there's Korea, right? Korea was somewhat different, as I understand it. They had a fairly draconian, what was it, testing and tracing regime. And they also had a very mild experience with it compared to the rest of the world. Is this right? So can you talk about Korea?
Yeah, well, Korea, everyone, you see, a country politically, if it ends up with a low impact, obviously all the politicians are going to crow about it. And they're not going to just say, ah, oh, well, you know, we had the low impact. They're going to claim, like, this is politics, especially international politics. So it was funny to watch them all running around, and each of them had a different type of rabbit's foot. So in one country like Japan, they didn't really say much at all, but they kind of mumbled about they traced, but they didn't. They did almost no testing. They didn't do lockdowns in Tokyo, like you said. And then they mumbled about masks, but their heart wasn't in it, because I think Japan are smart, and Japan know. I mean, that's why they were the only ones in the world who did the study with the antibodies. That's a dangerous study. That wouldn't be allowed in Europe because the outcome would be too dangerous for the narrative. Wow. So Japan, but Korea, their rabbit's foot was the test and trace. Mm-hmm. So they made an excuse for their good performance. And it was mainly test and trace. They didn't do as many lockdowns, but they had a magic test and trace. But once a virus is out in the community, the WHO 2019 pandemic guidelines, right? October 2019, 100 pages or more. I've been through them. I've downloaded it in case they try and go back and change it. October 2019, there were two very clear recommendations amongst many others. One was that testing and tracing once a virus is largely in a region, which it certainly was in all of these countries by February, March.
Right.
Testing and tracing is not recommended.
Hmm.
And the other thing was quarantine of exposed individuals. Now, not symptomatic. Symptomatic people stay at home, of course. But asymptomatic people who'd been connected or exposed to someone, quarantine of those guys was not recommended in a pandemic, because there is no evidence and no justification for any efficacy for doing that. And they were correct, because they knew from 40 years of science that once a virus is out and about, the test and trace and the quarantining is kind of gone. It's over. And that's why the lockdowns don't correlate, because it came into Europe in November, December. I mean, it spread and spread and spread with a higher R value. You know, we always heard about the R.
Mm-hmm.
And then in March, it seasonally triggered, but it was already all over the place.
Right.
So you're quarantining, you're literally, I used the example, when you try and test and trace with an influenza-like virus or a coronavirus that's already out and about, you're closing the door after the horses are literally gone over the horizon.
Right.
And that's the challenge. And that's why the WHO pandemic document, their Bible of 2019, culmination of decades of Western science, said you don't really test and trace and you don't isolate asymptomatic exposed individuals because there's no point. But they changed their mind based on China. So around lockdowns and all those things and pandemic management, incredibly in February and March, and this astounds me to this day, Europe and the West literally flushed all of their science down the toilet and took Chinese pandemic science off the shelf and said, this is what we use from now on.
Yeah.
And people have to answer why, because no one has given me a justification.
I want to ask you why in a second, but let's finish this piece on just the science. So Jay Bhattacharya at Stanford, I'm sure you're aware, right? And he has this great phrase, policy invariance, right? That, which I take to mean that the policies simply have no, well, it's what you've been saying, that there is no correspondence between policies and how the virus has behaved, right? So am I right that in every state in the United States and in every country, there's been essentially the same curve, right? And regardless, or the same overall outcome. Is that right? Regardless of policy. Is that right?
Yeah, probably safer to say that, no, that would be true. There is no correlation between policy and outcome. Yes, that's okay. It. Right. And even in Europe, and that applies, there were reports out back in as early as April showing across states there's no correlation. If anything, there's a mild correlation that more lockdown, worse mortality.
Yeah, I just looked at the Florida versus California graphs just now. I mean, I thought that alone is case closed. That's enough. I mean, it's infamously, Florida has had basically no lockdown for about 3 months now, and California has entered like a severe lockdown. And the California numbers have spiked, and the Florida numbers have kind of risen gradually. I just don't. And of course, DeSantis, the governor in Florida, is considered to be the most, you know, the most maniacal, irresponsible governor in American history. But it seems to me to be absolutely the case. And these are also similar states. They're both warm weather states. Florida has a very elderly population, famously, much more than California. And yet all of their numbers are lower than California, where we live under basically martial law or close to it. That seems alone to be, you know, the case. But now, like Sweden, let's talk about Sweden again. So yes, a mild lockdown, very mild, right? And no masking. And
very mild.
And am I right? They had more deaths at first, but now overall is what I was getting at. Overall, the effect has been roughly equivalent to sort of the average European country. Is that right?
Yeah, Sweden are, worldwide, they're number 26, I think.
Yeah.
The mortality per million stakes.
Right.
So they're way down at number 26 now.
Right.
And in Europe, they're around the same as the average. I mean, there's nothing unusual about Sweden and mortality, but we know this. And one thing I can tell you about Sweden, people won't know this one. I was given this. I wish I'd spotted it myself. So when you put in or decide to do a lockdown or decide not to, say you decide on the 17th of March to lock down, and another country beside you on the 17th of March decides, nah, I won't.
Right.
Well, that decision will only affect your actual death curve around 4 weeks later.
Right.
Because obviously the country who locks down on the 17th is going to maybe slow infections, but it's around 4 weeks from infection to death. So you're only going to see the effect of your decision 4 weeks later. In Sweden, the point where they decided not to lock down, and say Denmark and the others did, well, Sweden, 4 weeks later, before that decision could have had any effect yet, 4 weeks later, they were already had a huge death and the other guys didn't. So we know with certainty, mathematically, that Sweden's decision to not lock down did not create their curve. It could have slightly changed their curve later, but like 2/3 of the way they wear up their debt curve while the other Nordics had nothing before their decision could have had an effect.
Right.
This is blatant.
Yeah.
So we just, every mathematical analysis done, there is no link worth anything between the lockdown and the outcome. And Sweden as well now, the reason they got hit and the Nordic countries didn't, maybe the listeners have heard Sweden versus their neighbors. Sweden this year will have the same deaths per million as their neighbors.
That's it. Yeah.
There is no difference.
That's it.
The reason they had more deaths during the problem was Sweden had a year and a half of very low elderly mortality, way unusually low. So there was a big buildup of aged frail. And sadly, this is a tough virus. So they did get taken out pretty badly. The other countries didn't have that. They had a year and a half of normal mortality.
Okay.
So Sweden got hit with having too good a performance of keeping their elderly alive for the last 2 years. And ironically, they paid for it now because you got to die sometime.
Right. Okay. So let's get into the politics of this. Not your politics, the politics of the lockdowns. Tell us, why you think most governments have responded in the way that they have, certainly in Europe and in the United States. Why has there been this addiction to lockdowns and masking? Why do you think?
Yeah, now I'll see. Can I parse this out reasonably tight? So I've spent 30 years in complex problem solving, as I said, and that involves root cause diagrams, you know, is not charts, hypothesis for, against, and a whole ream of structural tools to get to the answer. And I apply that to problems like SARS-CoV-2, or I can apply it to, you know, cholesterol issues, anything, or my industrial, you know, corporate complex device, anything. But you can also apply it to politics or to management issues. It's the same tools,
right?
So if I did a root cause diagram to explain your question, it wouldn't be simple. There's a lot of factors, but let's say there's two main levels. One is within country causes of this thing having gone out of control and basically become mass psychosis, which it clearly is. It's mass psychosis. So the dynamic causing that is that initially the governments and the experts get spooked because they think there's going to be a calamity, and it's always safer to take action than to have people die and you didn't take action. So that's a mechanism.
Right.
So they lock down and they do all that stuff. The problem is then the people get to kind of almost like the lockdown because they believe they're being protected. And then this perverse thing happens to people that they're happy, and they're also happy working from home in the first few weeks. And it's kind of like a holiday and the weather's getting better. This happened in Ireland. So you kind of say it's to save granny and it's good and it's the right thing to do. And all the virtue comes up and everyone feels good. They're doing their thing. It's all good. But then that develops into a kind of a very corrosive, dangerous situation because they almost thank the politicians. Our prime minister in Ireland went from 38% approval to 72% in 4 weeks or 5 weeks.
Just like during a war.
Imagine what that's like.
Just like during a war.
During a war.
Just like during a war, yeah.
The politicians get huge kudos, ironically, for locking people down because they're saving lives. Oh, also, all the other issues that they're getting abused for, well, we don't even look at those. So suddenly they're free of all the things they're criticized for because now there's only one thing, SARS-CoV-2, COVID. So now they've got a one issue, big distraction. So their lives are beautiful and their ratings are going up. So then they do more of it. And then the people get more fearful. And all the governments actually put in place propaganda campaigns at the very start. They got the advertising standards bodies and the broadcast authorities, and they were instructed to fund all the radio and TV stations, money, hard cash, to run ads. So now you've got a money pipeline flowing. So now you've got all these kind of money flows. So you create this toxic brew that's self-fulfilling. So if I did a root cause diagram, you'd have cause going forward, and you'd have cause coming back. And it's a cycle, right? So you've got that problem in country. And I won't go on about that, but there's many more things about that, but that gives the flavor. So that's group psychosis within a country.
Nice.
But now you have to look at the other engine, right? So that's a big engine of psychosis, but you've got another engine. It's less recognized. The other engine is international bodies that are extremely interested in this thing and are extremely influential.
Yeah.
No conspiracies here. The WHO was handed the baton to tell the world what to do. Everyone was to defer to the WHO. So now see what you've done. You have handed the leadership of everything, coordinated leadership of response, to an unelected, non-democratic pseudo-corporation. It's actually more like a private corporation than government. It's not a government body. That's dangerous. The WHO have made it clear for 9 months at every turn, they have come out with stuff that has been very apart from the true science. I'll give you one example. On the 28th of July, when we knew with absolute certainty that this was powerfully seasonal, and you just look at the Europe spike, nothing summer, spike in winter. I mean, it's so obvious.
Right.
They came out on the 28th of July with an announcement, a bulletin, and I have it on my drive here. Coronavirus SARS-CoV-2 is not seasonal. It does not, it is not like the flu, and it is not seasonal. That was a bulletin. It wasn't a question answered from a journalist. They came out with that. And I could give 10 more examples. So we handed the leadership of this, the coordinated leadership, to a private corporation, which has shown incredible bias. So that's one of the external engines that's feeding all these self-destructive psycho engines in all the countries. And it makes a difference. It keeps them all going. And then you've got the World Economic Forum. They have openly declared that coronavirus SARS-CoV-2 is an enormous opportunity which cannot be missed for the Great Reset, to fix climate and all this other stuff. Yeah. And the World Economic Forum, weforum.org, go and look at them.
That's Davos, right?
They're intimately connected to Davos, but that's a huge organization. And to give an idea, look them up and go to their partners' webpage, their partners. And it's A to Z, and it's hyperlinked. You hit A, and you're going to get 35 or 40 corporations as partners. That's only A. I estimate they have 600 corporations, including all of the household names, as partners. So people think WE Forum is like some kind of crazy Davos little crowd. They have 600 corporate partners. That includes Pfizer. You go to P, you go to A, you got AstraZeneca.
Wow.
You know, you go any letter, all the big ones. So that's a huge organization. And their leader, Klaus Schwab, is 45 years growing that organization with one single view to reset and restructure our democracy into something that's very different than a democracy.
To restructure our global political economy. They're
everything.
Yeah, no, they have global ambitions. They're very clear about this and explicit, right? They want to restructure. And it started out with climate change. And by the way, you know, what's your opinion on climate change? Because this has obviously overlapping quite a bit here in the minds of people, right? Yeah.
It's frighteningly overlapping. Now, I've tended to refuse to talk about climate change because it's a bit like vaccination. There's a couple of topics that are crazy. And I noticed the topics you're not allowed to talk about are the ones most intimately linked into the very worrying anti-democratic organizations and pharmaceutical organizations. Come on, we're not under any illusions as to those guys.
Wow.
Anti-vax and climate change, they're the hot ones. And now we've got COVID is the other hot one you're not allowed to talk about. And you're right, they all link together in World Economic Forum.
Yeah.
Schwab was going on and on about vaccines a few months ago. He's an economic forum. What's he talking about? All talk about vaccines. We got to vaccinate everyone. Mm-hmm. Climate reset. And what they want essentially is, and all this climate stuff, there may be some merit in anthropomorphic or whatever, climate change. But, you know, on the scheme of nature's cycles, I don't think it's that big. But if we put it aside, they're all in climate, they're all in COVID, they're all in all of these big issues. But what they want is quite simple. They want a technocratic society, and they call it stakeholder capitalism. Mm. And Schwab has written several books, including one on Corona, which is actually, if you want to give your child nightmares, read it out to your child before bed. I mean, I'm talking frightening stuff, and it's published. Mm-hmm. So what they want is stakeholder capitalism. So to have the sovereign nations become less sovereign, to have the nationals and national countries become less national, and to kind of have more, the corporates are stakeholders to work with governments to run the system. But really what they want is for the politicians in all these individual countries to become more like middle managers in their corporation. So if you think, at the moment, your politicians and your president are the CEO of Ireland Inc. You know, like them or hate them, they are the kind of CEO, and Ireland is your country and you got your top guys. The view of stakeholder capitalism and World Economic Forum is no. the heads of Ireland are middle management. Now, most people know in a corporation, I was a middle manager for a long time, you don't make any decisions, right? The CEO does. So people could ask, well, if the heads of Ireland are middle management now in a pyramid, and the heads of France are middle management, who are the VPs, the directors, and the CEO? The World Economic Forum and people connected. That's the idea. And international politicians and international bureaucrats, they're the leadership structure in this new approach.
Yep.
And your country's politicians are kind of like middle management. So if the country's politicians now all together want to do something,
yep,
they do it.
Yep.
But in the future model, if the country's politicians all want to do something, like we did in my corporation sometimes, but the VPs and the CEOs said, no, we're not doing that. You don't do it.
Yep.
But that's the difference. People need to understand it's bringing corporate structure to Europe and America, led by the ultra wealthy, the corporates, and very important international dignitaries and bureaucrats, the Clintons, the, you know, all these people who are movers and shakers, they'd be part of the management of the world.
Yep.
There's no conspiracy. To be honest, if I were at that level, I don't like to say it, but I'd say this is a great long game program because it's going to make the world more stable, yeah, manageable,
yeah,
and leverageable.
Uh-huh.
So my daughter, right, is a medical student, and I was explaining some of this many months ago. And I kind of explained to her how it worked. And she said, damn. And I said, what? She said, they want an effing ant farm, don't they? And I've used that phrase ever since.
Yeah.
They don't want to kill people. They want to run an ant farm. And all the little ants. Yeah. Ant farm.
So in the 1910s, the West, Europe and America created the Hun. In our minds, in the minds of the people, right? The German Hun, who was an animal who would never stop. He would never stop. He was out to kill us all and to dominate the world. He was a beast, a monster. And we had to defeat him. And the only way to defeat him, Ivor, don't you know, was to remake the political economies of all those countries to fight the war effectively. And what they imposed was what you're describing now, a form of what I call corporatism, and it's been called this by other people too, which is it's very much what you're talking about, where the corporations, the big corporations, manage the economy with the government together, right? And so it's not the corporations making all the decisions, it's doing it in unison with the government heads, right? And that's exactly what they got in both World War I when they first defeated the Hun, and then in the World War II when they had to defeat him again, and along with his Japanese monster enemies, right? We did that. And then out of that, we got rules, laws in this country, and I think in Europe too, in which the corporations and the government were essentially establishing policy for all the rest of us. Then we created Al-Qaeda as the big enemy that was going to kill us all. And we remade much of our political economy in around that too, to fight that war. And then in this country, especially, but also in Western Europe over the last 4 years, as you well know, Russia, the Russian threat, Putin. Putin was the new monster who had to be defeated. And what did we have to do? We had to change our communication systems in this country. We have to have the major networks that broadcast communication, like Facebook and Twitter and all of social media, right, which now has a monopoly on communications. We now have rules where you cannot question things like the election results or climate change or a whole host of things, or question back in the day whether Russia, you know, hacked the country and was now controlling the presidency. Yeah. And now I think with climate change, and Naomi Klein has said this explicitly, the reason that she became interested in climate change, she says she wasn't originally, she was a socialist she just didn't care about environmentalism until she saw that climate change was, and this was her word, an opportunity, because you create this fear of climate change. And back, I remember 20, 25 years ago when I first saw a headline about it, I remember panicking and thinking, oh my God, they've convinced me that I'm going to be underwater in 10 years and my son is going to live in a hellscape. Yeah. Well, we know that the big climate change activists are calling for radical reconstruction of the global political economy. At Davos and and everywhere. All the major environmentalist groups want this. Okay. They said the only way to save the planet is to introduce basically a global version of social democracy, which is corporatism, right? Where the corporations and the government co-manage the economy. And now we've got a new one. We've got this pandemic, as you're saying, and this, I think this fishtails perfectly with your argument here about COVID. Wonderful, wonderful opportunity. Again, we must remake the world's economy, political economy, because COVID is the new Hun. It's going to kill us all. It's going to kill us all unless we let Pfizer and Moderna and all the governments and the Chinese Communist Party and the World Health Organization and all their corporate sponsors make all the big decisions and, again, restructure the global political economy the way that they see fit in this technocratic way that you're talking about. I think you're absolutely right.
And the only thing I'd correct there, Thad, is rather than killing all of us, obviously it'll kill all but 99.98% of us.
That's right. That's right.
That's exactly it. It's a form of disaster capitalism.
There you go.
And right. We've seen it so many times. I mean, there is nothing like a disaster for an opportunity. But this time, like with the tidal wave, I think in Indonesia, was it? And you had these fishermen on the beach for hundreds of years, and the corporates were pressuring the Indonesian government because they want to put up hotels on this prime beach. Mm. And the government actually held off because they said, oh, you know, these guys, hundreds of years, you know, seven generations of doing their fishing. Oh. But then the tidal wave, remember the big one, New Year's Eve, I think it was, years ago?
Mm-hmm.
That came in and ruined everything. A few months later, when they were reconstructing, the corporates all came in to help restructure. The whole beach line was filled with high rises, right?
Yeah.
Fishermen ended up 30 miles inland, unemployed and working in menial jobs.
Yeah.
That's disaster capitalism. And I think even in the US, wasn't there New Orleans that flood? Didn't all the education system got changed and
Katrina.
A lot of stuff on the back of it?
Right. Exactly.
Always the same. Yeah.
Yes. Let's talk about the effects of the lockdowns, and then I'll let you go. People are pretty much refusing to look at in any serious way what the lockdowns are doing to human beings, to human lives, to human bodies. Can you talk about that? What are the effects of this?
Yeah, the effects. Well, I'll verbalize some, but if people go to collateralglobal.org, they're linked to Great Barrington, and they're archiving all of the published papers on the damages of lockdown. I think they have 90 now under societal, health, and psychological. I think they don't get into economic, but that's a given. The economic damage here is going to cause enormous death and suffering.
Great.
We've heard it. Even the WHO, I think, acknowledged there might be 100 million more children starving. I mean, but if you go there, you can get to go through all the horror. But to give some examples, I mean, we've had anecdotally the number of suicides related to lockdown. I'm linked to networks that I know of three, and I never heard about suicides before. There were three triple suicides in Ireland over the last few months in the newspapers. Mm. Triple suicides, which like are one every couple of years in Ireland. We're a small country. Mm. And in England, suicide attempts, and this is real data, in London, it's hard to get data on suicide because the coroners, it takes a year or two before it's released. Hmm. So it's hard to know right now. But in England, suicide attempts for the paramedics went up 70% during the period of lockdown. There are surveys in Ireland on psychological health, and there's a dramatic shift versus prior years in the negative. Mm-hmm. And we all know it.
Mm-hmm.
Lockdown, unless you're sitting on your ass in a nice government job or working from home on a big salary, lockdown for most people who are losing their businesses, losing their work, their right to earn a living, you know, losing everything. In Ireland, we've lost all sport. It was a huge thing in Ireland. I try and tell people, you know, just imagine what they've taken off you and you've said nothing. They've taken all your sport. They've taken your weddings, limited to six people. they've taken your funerals. They've taken your ability to visit your parents in their last months, where it doesn't matter a damn visiting with them, right? Uh-huh. They've taken away your jobs in vast numbers. And I could go on. They've taken away your bars, your socializing. They've taken away your parties. They've taken away your theaters. They've taken away your movies. They have literally taken away everything. And we know there's 25 published studies that show there's no linkage to death rates. Like the enormity of it. But there's figures coming out now on cancers. The cancer diagnoses missed in Ireland is like 80,000 in the country of 5 million.
Yes.
The UK government, ONS, did an estimate, and they're looking at 500,000 deaths, early deaths, and the life years lost will be much bigger because these are middle-aged people, whereas the people dying for corona are average age 82. So there's very few life years lost. There's studies out of England looking at 500,000 early deaths when there's only 60,000, arguably, for COVID itself. And we know from the lockdown studies, it might have been 62 without lockdowns. You're talking a few thousand deaths versus hundreds of thousand. And in people who are aged versus people who are much younger. Like the impact of lockdown, I used to say it's going to be 10 times worse, the impact, than anything they saved. And in the past months, Thad, as it's become clearer how useless lockdown is, as it's become clearer how few life years, even if you save someone on average, and as the damages become clearer, I'm comfortable saying lockdown's 100 times worse than what its benefits on a broad level.
Wow.
100 times. So I'd say our officials and experts blindly are 100-to-1 cost benefit wrong.
Wow.
And it just doesn't bother them. It doesn't bother them because of what you said earlier. They're all doing it together. So no one's at fault for this horror because they're all doing it. And That's the one country that didn't do it, Sweden, what did they do? They vilified it.
Exactly.
Constantly.
Exactly. So
that was a rant. Sorry.
That was a good, that's what I've been waiting for. That's great. So, So yesterday, let me tell you about my day. You know, this was after, I think it was the day after we got yelled at on the sidewalk, on the walking path by the crazy woman. I drove to go shopping. Okay. And I drove about 5 to 10 miles one way. And I drove by, of course, countless small businesses that were closed. And in this country, as in the UK and in Ireland, many, maybe most of those businesses are owned by immigrants. Immigrants who we often celebrate, especially if we are on the left side of politics. And I'm an open borders guy. I love immigration. I want more of it. But small businesses, not just immigrants, but these are working class people trying to make some wealth for themselves. This is the way that people, working class people in America, make wealth often is starting small businesses. Closed. Okay. But I went happily to Costco and Target, major multinational corporate chains, which have been open even in California, even in the Bay Area, the world champion of lockdowns here, have been open since the beginning. And I did my shopping and then drove by another several dozen, maybe 100 closed small businesses. Now, this goes back to what we were talking about with, you know, the attempt to restructure the political economy. Well, whether it's deliberate or not, whether this was their intention or not, look who's benefiting. Oh, and by the way, when I got home, there was a package waiting for me from who? Amazon.
Yeah.
Okay. So the centralization of the economy, the destruction of small businesses. Tell me that is not in the interest of global elites who own those big corporations.
It's, you could say, I'm just searching for words here. If it's not a planned part of it, it's a massive bonus for them that makes them chortle with delight at night.
Why
no
not?
No question.
Why not?
Because if you destroy communities, small business, and you're talking about community here, because community is not any corporate. That's the opposite of community. And I know I was in a corporate and we had community engagement. That's all window dressing. It always was. I was a manager and I knew it, but we had to do it. Yeah. You don't want to look like just a corporate who's hiring local people and making huge profits. We made massive profits. So you do community engagement and all this. It's window dressing. But you've got communities and you've got corporates. And there's a clear distinction. Communities are farmers, small stores, small businesses, you know, local clubs, pubs. That's community.
Mm-hmm.
And it just so happens that these policies that we know are profoundly unscientific, but they're driving them in, they destroy communities. And the one thing you want to do if you're restructuring into a corporatocracy, which clearly is the goal, is you want to destroy communities, because communities and families often resist change to corporate kind of more draconian, less democratic structures. They go and they want to vote against it.
That's
but
right.
If you destroy and divide communities, you're left with ants that are kind of scurrying around and bumping into each other. That's what you want if you want to take over the ant farm. You don't want ants who are all piling up together and resisting what you're doing. So destroy communities. So I'd say, yeah, that's either a huge bonus or actually is just part of it. Yeah, if we ruin all the small businesses, divide the communities and leave people as wage slaves who are now impoverished because of the lockdowns, it's going to make all our other stuff easier.
Yeah.
These guys are going to be eating out of our hand. We will have broken them.
Exactly. All right. Last question. What do I do? What do we do? Especially those of us living in a place like the Bay Area where it is a cult. It is a cult.
Yeah.
And there's hardly anyone who's even dissenting at all. As I said, 97% compliance with masks here. What do we do?
Ireland, similar.
Yeah, I know.
Not outdoors.
Yeah.
What do we do? So this is what's kept me 7 days a week. And I gave my motivations. So you know that.
Yep.
On this is because what do we do? Now, we have an Irish group of doctors and surgeons. We've gotten connections to some politicians, and we've done a ton of work with two white papers that were widely distributed. And we've sent out missives, leaflets, and we're doing internet stuff as well. So you can do all that in each country. You know, what we're doing now. And also, if you have some funding, you can get maybe a celebrity to do interviews and talk about what we're talking about. All that stuff is kind of organized resistance to the madness.
Okay.
But there is another one that's come up only in the last week, and it might appeal to you because of the mask challenge you had.
Yeah.
So a couple of weeks ago, someone wrote to me anonymously and said, look, I'm a doctor. I kind of need to stay anonymous, but I had an idea. And the idea was to do an emblem that represents all of the people who are scientific thinkers, logical thinkers, free thinkers, supporters of democracy, and who know this thing is a horror show.
Yeah.
Not anti-vaxxers or 5G heads. No, all the people like us who are smart thinkers, who know this is terrible, who are scientific. And he picked the smiley face.
Yes.
And he said, this is a classic emblem. And it was used, you know, Acid House, but it's got all these connotations of hippies and freedom and a better day, a better time in ways.
Yeah.
Take the smiley and put a message on it, or maybe myriad messages.
Yes.
And have it represent where you are simply saying, I am part of a huge group of people around the world who disagree with this. Doesn't mean we're rabidly anti-mask. It doesn't mean we're in any way anti-vaccination in principle or any of the bad stuff. It just means we want discussion and we do not consent to what's happening. We want a discussion.
I had exactly this idea. I had exactly this idea.
Oh, great.
I love it.
Well, yeah, this one has already got traction on Twitter. And the other side are already complaining. What are all these smiley faces on people's, you know, avatars? So it's getting traction, but it may soon get a lot more. So I've been hearing from people, there's groups setting up, a lot of websites selling the badges. I threw out a suggestion, reject bad science, bring back the smile.
Yeah.
There's a website I can send you a link to that's got really good people, medical background people, doctors, helping to spearhead this. And it's already selling badges and already has downloaded PDF of cards and all kinds of material on the theme. So I think this could become something really genuinely huge, because it'll give an outlet for all the people like us who currently, you know, what do you do? Well, here's one thing you can do, and no one can complain. I'm wearing a smiley badge and say I question the science. Nothing wrong with that, surely. It's not even offensive.
Right.
And, you know, I would like to see in a few months, it more and more all over the place, you'll actually in your own country begin to, in real world, bump into someone. What's going to happen when you see someone with one of those faces? You're going to be able to go over, no mask, stand that far apart and
That's
talk
it.
About this.
That's it. You'll find a friend and an ally and a comrade.
Absolutely.
And I had exactly the same idea. And I thought, because for me, again, back to the masking and my feeling of alienation here, right? You know, what's so horrible is being in like a supermarket where I have to wear a mask and not knowing and sort of assuming that everyone in that supermarket wearing masks is against me. But there must be, even here, there must be some people in that market who agree with me on this stuff. So we can put the badge when we have to wear masks, we can put the badge on our mask.
You can do that too. Yeah. And you know what? I did have one little warning that there are masks out there that are a full smiley face. And they're actually saying, hey, it's great. I got a mask. I'm keeping Granny safe. So gotta be, but a black mask with a small smiley is a different message. T-shirts. So everyone's going to get in on this. All third parties are already getting in. Okay. They're going to be T-shirts. There's going to be hats. There's going to be everything. The ideas are pouring out of this group. Now, I'm linked to them, but I'm not actually driving it, but I'm delighted to push it on Twitter. And it's endless scope here for ideas like lanyards that say are exempt, you know, the smiley faces on it. And the messages. I liked what I thought of today, and this is going to be its debut, Thad, on your podcast.
All right.
So I was talking with my wife about this, and we're quite excited about the power of it, like a flower, peaceful protest, whatever. And it occurred to me the phrase, okay, I support science, and then I smile. So rather than bring back the smile, I smile. I reject bad science. I smile. I do not agree with whatever. I smile. I smile is a nice, short, constant message, and then you can vary the message on top. And then it occurred to me, you could actually put a little eye. I smile. Like, you know, iPad.
Yeah.
There's one in the eye for the big corporate. I smile.
I love it. I love it so much. There is hope. There is not just light at the end of the tunnel with a vaccine. There is light at the end of the tunnel with this mass psychosis. So yeah, give me that URL for where we can get the smiley faces badges. And I will post that on the, it'll be in the show notes for the audio, and it'll be on the YouTube for the video. And everyone, please get your smiley faces so I have someone to talk to in the supermarkets. Ivor Cummins, thank you. You are my hero. Thank you for coming on the show. It's been a real pleasure talking to you. And I just thank God that you have been doing the work 7 days a week for all these months. So thank you for everything, man.
Well, thank you, Tad. Great stuff. And we'll circle back maybe later and see how things are going.
Let's do it. Okay, my brother. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
This is the Unregistered Podcast, and I'm Thaddeus Russell. To join the new Renegade University, go to renegadeuniversity.com. To join the new Unregistered Underground, the supporting listeners group for the podcast, go to unregisteredunderground.com. Thanks for listening.